Hi, Steve Pomerantz here, host of On the Money with today's On the Money Extra, where we feature market updates and insights as well as guest interviews with noted financial experts to help you stay informed and learn the facts to make the right decisions about money. So let's get started. Carrie Schwab Pomerantz is president of the Charles Schwab Foundation and is leader of Schwab Community Services. In 2010, she was appointed to the President's Advisory Council on Financial Capability, and she writes a personal finance column called Ask Carrie at Schwab.com. Carrie is the daughter of Charles Schwab, who founded one of the largest online brokerage firms starting in 1971. And although our last names are pronounced the same, the spelling is a little different. And as far as I know, we are not related. Welcome to the show, Carrie Schwab Pomerantz with a T.
Thank you, Steve. My long lost cousin.
I think so. Maybe so. So, Carrie, your new book, The Charles Schwab Guide to Finances After 50, I'm going to ask you a lot of questions about it. But just let me say this. I find this a very good resource book, and I highly recommend it to my listeners. If you're starting out and you're trying to learn about this stuff, this is a very good resource, The Charles Schwab Guide to Finances After 50. And if you can remember Pomerantz and you can remember Schwab, you're going to find this book everywhere. So, Carrie, give us a brief overview of the book and what the reader can expect to find.
You know, I've been involved with financial education programs for years as president of the Charles Schwab Foundation. And, you know, obviously, and I've been in this business forever, and the financial world has gotten so complex. It's, you know, even professionals want to run for the hills. And so I created this book to try to make it much more accessible. So, you know, it says the Charles Schwab Guide to After 50, but to be honest with you, it's really anybody who's approaching 50. I mean, anybody in their 40s, it makes sense. Mm-hmm. But we broke it up into different sections, you know, 10 years away from retirement, or at least 10 years from retirement to 5 years from retirement to in retirement. And then we have whole sections on the people in our lives because we don't make financial decisions, you know, in a vacuum, and also a whole section on Social Security. And we organized it in 50 questions, basically the most common questions people ask about their money and being, you know, financially prepared. So you can kind of dip in and out as it's relevant to you in the areas that are, you know, where you are in your life.
Yeah, I did notice that way it was organized. And that's one of the reasons why I think this is a fine book for resource. Because again, if you have these questions as you go along your life, you can come back to the book, find the question in your period of life and your time of life, and probably find an answer. And I want to point one out, one question that was asked, and that's in the book as well. You had mentioned in your blog a statistic that I found quite worrisome, which was, according to a 2013 retirement survey, more than half the people surveyed had less than $25,000 in total savings. And I know someone wrote to you asking, you know, saying, you know, I'm approaching 50 and I am one of those types of people. What should I do? So give us an example of the answer and how they would find that in the book.
Yeah. Well, obviously, the sooner you start to save, you know, the easier it is. And so if you do wait till your 50s, you're going to have to save a lot more. But I would say to somebody who's in that position, you know, don't lose hope. You just have to make savings a priority and make it automatic. And so I think the first step really is sort of to assess where you are, where you're spending your money, and be really honest with yourself. I think that's the biggest problem. We're not necessarily honest about what places we can cut back in order to save. But let me give you an example, Steve. If a 50-year-old were to start saving $23,000 a year at age 50, and I say $23,000 because that's the amount you can save total in a 401k. So $23,000 up till you're 65, 15 years later, at a 6% rate of return, it can grow to $570,000.
Mm-hmm.
So the point is, we do have time, but, you know, again, you know, the earlier, the better.
And coupling that with Social Security and reasonable spending and perhaps, you know, downsizing or moving to an area that's more affordable, making some adjustments that aren't earth-shaking, you know, you can have enough money to live throughout the rest of your life. So if you take advantage of these savings plans and do the savings yourself, you'd have less to worry about.
Right. I think, yeah, it's just not too late. I'm in my, you know, in my early 50s, and I feel young and like I have a whole life in front of me. And I think a lot of us in that at this age do.
How does one figure out how much is enough, though?
You know, there's rules of thumb in our industry, and of course, we talk about this in the book, but we call it the 25 times rule.
Mm-hmm.
So let me explain it to you. Depending on how much money you're going to need to withdraw at retirement, we multiply that by 25. So for instance, if you need $40,000 at retirement, you know, per year, say for the next 30 years, you multiply that by 25, and that comes up to $1 million. So this is money you need to save $1 million, but this is money then will supplement your Social Security or other reliable sources of income.
Right. So if you're getting $30,000 in Social Security, then, you know, you're talking about a lifestyle that's actually costing you $70,000, of which $40,000 is going to be coming out of your savings.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
Okay. What are some of the issues that I have to start thinking about as I get closer to retirement? What becomes important then?
I'd say a couple things. One is, you know, we always recommend that people have 3 to 6 months of cash that represents, you know, the essential expenses in your budget, 3 to 6 months of cash.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you get closer to retirement, for instance, maybe 5 years from retirement, you want to up the amount of cash to, say, 12 months of essential expenses in cash, for one thing. You know, another is a lot of people think that they need to sell or pay off their mortgage right away, like that's essential.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not necessarily the right thing to do for some people. For instance, you definitely don't want to, say, take a chunk of your savings at the expense of having some liquidity and access to your money for, you know, someone who may not have a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or, you know, and I'm not suggesting you invest it in the stock market. You know, again, it depends on how much money in total and savings you have, but you might be better off keeping it in the stock market just for that reason than what you can earn in your house. There's also the emotional component, I understand, but from a practical financial perspective, it may not be the right thing.
Yeah, I mean, if you're taking your savings and now you're converting a large chunk of those savings back into your house, then you're turning what is a liquid asset into a pretty much illiquid asset.
Exactly.
You know, we don't know how much your house is going to appreciate versus your other investments, but yet liquidity has value. Having access to the money, you really don't want to tie your money up. So I like what you said. It's more of an emotional decision. And sometimes in this case, this is a great example of how the emotional decision is probably not the best.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
You know, a lot of people ask, if I have a pension, you know, I'm a teacher or something like that, and they give me a choice of taking a lump sum pension distribution or an annuity, how do I determine which is best?
I think it's very individualistic, of course. Just things to think about. For instance, a pension, you know, the underlying amount can be a fair amount of money. And the question is, can you manage it
mm-hmm.
yourself? I mean, there's definitely benefits of taking that money and managing it and having access to it. But the question is can you take that lump sum and manage it properly to generate that income for yourself?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's probably the biggest question you have to answer yourself. The other nice thing about taking the money, though, once it's your money, and you can pass it off to your heirs. And again, a pension may not, you know, allow you to do that.
That's true. My guest is Carrie Schwab Pomerantz, no relation as far as I know. And her book is The Charles Schwab Guide to Finances After 50. It's a book that I recommend. I'm taking you slowly through the different parts of the book. Part 3, Life and Retirement. You know, here's a question I get asked a lot. You know, what insurance do I need at this point in my life? Just give me a brief idea of how to conceptualize the idea of insurance when you're in retirement.
Okay. So when you're in retirement, you don't necessarily need disability insurance, but if you're still working, you definitely want the disability insurance.
Mm-hmm.
You always want health insurance. And, you know, and if you get into retirement over 65 and over, you know, there's all options for you to purchase, you know, additional insurance in addition to Medicare as well, because Medicare only covers about 60% of your expenses. And the other is long-term care. That's a big decision, something that probably you should have decided on before you retire, you know, anywhere between age 50 and, say, 64, because otherwise, if you wait, it's cost prohibitive. And the majority of us are going to need some type of long-term care, and Medicare doesn't pay for that. The other is life insurance. A lot of people think that you're supposed to always have life insurance, and that, for some, could be a waste of money, and especially if you don't have any dependents, or maybe you don't have a small business that you need to cover. So it's worthwhile once you get into retirement to take a look and see whether that's an area you can cut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's exactly how I would describe it as well. Getting into the part 5, estate planning, I love this question because I see this a lot when I'm speaking with individuals. How do I divide my estate between children who have different needs and different financial resources? Because the sense is fairness is you want to split it all evenly. But on the other hand, some children need more than others. What's some of the thinking there?
Well, I'm one of those, you know, is fair the same as, you know, being equal? And for me, I prefer to be equal. personally, but some people, you know, some people don't feel the same way. I think there's things to think about. The first is, you know, what kind of message potentially are you leaving your kids with giving an unequal amount to each one, maybe one who needs it more.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, a friend of mine who is a stay-at-home mom, and her father basically said, I'm not going to give you money because you obviously you're fine and you don't need it because you're staying at home.
Right.
You know, and so he, you know, was making a judgment on what she is, you know, what she is doing, right, mm-hmm. with her life.
Right.
You know, let's just say the lawyer versus a social worker, you know, could that be the case always? You know, will the lawyer always be highly paid lawyer or will she do something completely different? So your kids could change positions or, you know, divorce, whatever it may be. So I think you have to be really careful about making a judgment on who needs more money. But either way, I think the most important thing a parent needs to do is share with the kids, obviously when they're old enough, to understand what your wishes are and why. Because if you don't, you potentially can separate a family afterwards, you know, by making choices that appear unequal.
You may leave a legacy behind of disagreement between the children and a feeling of being treated unfairly. And
yes.
Is that really what your legacy should be?
Right. You want your kids to stay together and, mm-hmm. you know, you don't want to spread them apart.
Right, right. Unfortunately, we're out of time, but this book also addresses some questions like, you know, I'm an empty nester, but my child wants to move back home. I like being an empty nester. You know, what do I do? How do I handle that situation? Or my husband recently passed away and he always did our finances. How can I manage by myself? And one other question that we handle a lot as well is I'm contemplating divorce after 25 years. What do I do? And it could be a wife or a husband thinking in the same way. The book is The Charles Schwab Guide to Finances After 50. My guest and author, Carrie Schwab Pomerantz, and I do recommend this on our reading list. So, Carrie, thank you so much for joining us.
Steve, thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. Take care.
You're listening to On the Money with certified financial planner Steve Pomerantz. If you'd like information about guests, topics, or anything you hear on this program, call 866-MONEY01 or visit the show's website at onthemoneyradio.org.